This is Talk is Cheap on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio, also simulcast on kpw.org, and available archived on Radio for All, exclusively on radioforall.net. I hope you'll check out radioforall.net. It was the what used to be the Independent Media Center. So today's episode is on decriminalization of sex workers, and there's several sex workers unions movement, especially since the pandemic, that has flourished. So let me read you a little bit on sexual surrogacy. Can we dial it in somewhere between women being trafficked and having sexual surrogacy as some form of health and wellness solution? Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Okay, so this is from Medical News Today, and there's a whole myriad of information on sex work and all kinds of solutions. So I'm just trying to open up a dialogue with this show, as usual. And please research this stuff all yourself. Use your own brain. So this is from Medical News Today, medically reviewed by Lori Horowitz, by Rachel Ann T. Melagrito on April 27, 2022. Sex surrogate therapy is a three-way therapeutic relationship to help a person feel more comfortable with sex, sensuality, and sexuality. It involves working with a licensed therapist and a surrogate partner. Also known as surrogate-assisted therapy or surrogate partner therapy, this treatment aims to help build self-awareness and skills in physical and emotional intimacy. Person sees both a sex therapist and a surrogate partner to help develop a healthy self-concept and improve sexual functioning. While this treatment can involve intercourse with the surrogate partner, it does not always. Person may seek this type of therapy because of sexual dysfunctions or any trauma, fears, or anxieties they experience related to sex. Sexual health and satisfaction can play a crucial role in a person's health and well-being, and forming sexual relationships may impact happiness and fulfillment. Surrogate partner therapy is a three-way therapeutic relationship among a licensed therapist, a client, and a surrogate partner. The treatment typically involves a variety of therapeutic experiences, sometimes including sexual intercourse, to explore and resolve barriers preventing a person from having physical, sexual, and emotional intimacy. Dr. William Masters, a gynecologist, and Dr. Virginia Johnson, a sexologist, introduced the concept in their book Human Sexual Inadequacy, which they originally published in the 1970s. The course of therapy usually begins with the therapist and the client determining goals and creating a treatment plan to address the issues behind the client's difficulties. The therapist may recommend surrogate partner therapy if they deem it helpful. Partner surrogates work in collaboration with the therapist and the client. They receive training to mentor, coach, and help clients meet their treatment goals. Similarly to the way exposure therapy enables a person to face their fear, this treatment provides access to a safe partner to allow a person to practice techniques, among other skills. The goals of this treatment may include building self-awareness and self-confidence, developing effective communication training social skills, and developing physical and emotional intimacy skills. It is important to note that the therapist is not involved in the sessions between the surrogate and the client. However, open, proper, and consistent communication among all three team members is fundamental for the approach's success. All team members make a mutual decision to terminate therapy, typically when the client achieves their goals. While some individuals may benefit from this therapy, more research is necessary. Additionally, it may be advisable to establish clarity on the ethics and legality of this practice. There is some overlap between sex therapy and sex surrogate therapy, as both treatments aim to help resolve sexual issues. While sex therapists may provide sex-based exercises to perform at home in between sessions, such as watching porn or masturbating, they do not participate or offer hands-on exercises to help their clients practice and develop these skills. Sex therapy is essentially a form of talk therapy. Sex surrogate therapy may often involve a sex therapist as a licensed professional in addition to a certified surrogate partner. With consent, a person may be able to practice physical or sexual intimacy or techniques that a sex therapist advises with the surrogate partner. Becoming a sex therapist typically requires a person to earn a master's degree in a related field such as mental health, therapy, counseling, or psychology. In contrast, a person does not need any specific degree or course to qualify as a surrogate partner. Can it maybe be part of a robust healthcare system instead of trafficking from the pimp sector, which includes all of those who profit financially from the prostitution of others, which includes a number of different roles: drivers, guards, procurers, seasoners, madams, brothel owners, complicit landlords, unseen investors, lawyers, and bribe-taking officials. Cab drivers, hotel doormen are also the central part of this pimp sector. So coming up, what this is a YouTube video from the Oregon Sex Workers Committee public hearing from 7/15/21, but I also suggest you get the video that they have on their on the Oregon Sex Workers Committee's website. Go to OregonSWC.org. All right, so coming up, let's decriminalize sex work and stop the morality, the false morality stuff. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. Oh, and one thing, when you go to OregonSWC.org, one of the justifications that they're using, the examples they're using for what, for why decriminalization would work, is for the difference between justification and legalization. We didn't legalize gay sex. You don't have to have a permit to have gay sex. We decriminalized it. What you do in your own bedroom consensually, as long as you're not harming anyone, is your business.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Ooh, I once was lost, but now I'm found. I don't have a strap. Was blind, but now I see. It was grace that taught my heart to fear, and fear my grace relief. Oh, how precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. And it was grace that brought me safely thus far, and oh, its grace will lead me home. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. Though I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. I was blind, but now I see. I was blind, but now I see.
Thank you guys very much. So for those of you guys tuning in out of curiosity or out of, you know, anger, you might be tuning in and be like, oh, this is awful. If you're hate watching this right now, all I ask is you just listen. Because I thought I knew a lot about this topic. I did not. And the people you're going to listen to tonight are the bravest, brightest, most brilliant. The onus is always on the most vulnerable to educate the authority. So please, all I ask is just stay open and listen. You will learn something, probably about yourself. So thank you very much.
So my name's Rob Nose. I'm the state representative for House District 42, which consists of Inner Southeast and Northeast Portland. I've been serving in the state legislature since the year 2014. And I was the main sponsor of House Bill, which, had it passed, would have repealed the crimes of prostitution, criminal sexual solicitation, and promoting prostitution, essentially making it so that people who engage in the work of these acts would no longer be considered to be engaging in criminal activity and potentially subject to interactions with law enforcement and the legal system. Now, I suspect that being a gay man, a trade unionist with almost 30 years of experience of standing workers, and being someone who has seen that our society needs fewer reasons to involve people in the criminal justice system, especially for something like sex, made this bill and this idea pretty easy sell for me. I believe that the decriminalization of sex work and those who engage in it will lead to better public health and safety outcomes. The decriminalization of sex work would further the journey of our state and country that we are on about how we can have less interaction in the justice system for things that consenting adults do and do not harm anyone. And I believe that decriminalization will help to improve the working conditions of people who do sex work. And I mean that in all seriousness. If you think about it, we all use our bodies in our work in some form or another. Many of us, not in as intimate a way or vulnerable a manner as a sex worker, but for sure many jobs require that we bring our bodies to the work. Lastly, I'm glad that we're having this event tonight, as I think for the bill to pass in a future legislative session, we have to build more awareness of what we are seeking and why, and educate people about why this is a good idea, and be clear that we're not sanctioning human trafficking for sex, and that we believe decriminalization will better help our society address that problem as well. So I look forward to the rest of the panel introducing themselves and the rest of the presenters this evening, and I thank you again for all being here.
My name is Alex Andrews. I am the co-founder of the Sex Worker Outreach Project Behind Bars. We provide services and support for people who have been impacted by criminalization and have also traded sex. I have been an activist since 2008. Before that, I was a sex worker. I entered the industry in 1984. I have also been a victim of sexual assault. I have been a victim of domestic violence, and I am a survivor of exploitation. I support the full decriminalization of sex work because I believe that it will make us safer. I believe that it will make us healthier, and I believe that it will make us a better society, and that will create a better world for us to live in.
I'm Elizabeth Snyder Hayward. I am a state senator, and I have been for the better part of 10 years now, which astonishes me every time I realize that. I had hoped to be the co-chief sponsor on the Senate side of House Bill 3088 for many of the reasons that Rob outlined, but also because I am a staunch Democrat and in many ways a staunch libertarian. What adults do to earn money or for any purpose whatsoever, if it's safe and consensual, then that's their business and nobody else's. And it's certainly not the law's business. And for us to have sex work be criminalized is really a crime against consenting adults, regardless. And it also puts sex workers in a much more vulnerable position, because if you're afraid you're going to get arrested, then you're unwilling to go step forward when you've been assaulted or taken advantage of or exploited or anything else. That's got to stop. Categorically has to stop.
Hi, everybody. My name is Elle Stanger. I've been published naked on the internet since 2005, and I've been a sex worker in Portland since 2009. So sometimes folks ask me why I look familiar. I'm also a recently certified sexuality educator by the American Association of Sexuality Counselors and Therapists. And even though I am well qualified to be in this position, I wasn't sure if they would certify me because I am a current sex worker. The discrimination is real, and it's a very real barrier to employment. I'm one of the few people in my educator field who knows what it's like to be a public or out sex worker. I know what it's like to share that I've done legal and illegal work, and I understand how any type of criminalization. My short background story is that when I was a little kid, I saw Silence of the Lambs and wanted to be Jodie Foster and catch the bad guys. And then halfway through my criminology degree at Portland State, the economy collapsed and I started doing sex work. I didn't expect to fall in love with it, but I did. I completed my degree in criminology, but I never looked back because I knew at that point I didn't want to be part of a system and complicit in a system that hurts people and makes their lives harder. People who want to pay for touch are not inherently sick, sad, perverse, or harmful. I know this. In 2014, I interviewed Detective Brendan McGuire of Portland Police Bureau Sex Crimes Division. And he told me the media often mislabels and conflates trafficking and sex work to boost ratings. 2 months ago, I spoke with Assistant Chief Jamie Resch of Portland Police Bureau, and she confirmed that they do currently use their resources to conduct decoy stings, which means they post an ad pretending to be an adult responds, they arrest them, and in some cases label them as complicit in sex trafficking. This can ruin people's lives. People do kill themselves over being ostracized and shamed in their communities. Looking at PPB's published 2018 to 2019, April of these years, crime statistics, I saw 23 human trafficking offenses. Welcome, Joanne Hardesty. I was just reading about police crime statistics, so thank you for lightening the mood. All right, so to backtrack, so from April 2018 to April 2019, Portland Police Bureau listed 23 human trafficking offenses and 156 prostitution offenses. The problem is they mislabel them, so I don't know what the difference is, and also how many resources could have been actually gone towards human trafficking instead of arresting people who want to buy or sell touch. So I know from experience that some people hate pornography, sex outside of marriage, sex for money, queer sex, kinky sex, polysex. I know that there are people who are traumatized due to their own negative experiences with sexual explicit media, and I understand that trauma can cloud your bigger picture. But the people who hurt us the most are often the people who want to abolish sex work, not those who want to make it safer. So I urge you, listeners, to not be impacted by people who cloak their hatred of sex work with false concern for us. Please support full decriminalization of sex work in Oregon and beyond.
Well, first, thank you very much for the invitation. I'm honored to be part of this listening session this evening. This is a really important issue. As we reimagine what community safety looks like, we have to make sure that we're using our limited resources in a way that's building community and not destroying community. It's ironic that I came in as you were giving the data and statistics, because this is a question I've asked Chief Lavelle. I've said, can you actually unpack for me what is adult behavior and what is people being actually pushed into prostitution against their will, who are underage and who have no say? Can you disaggregate that for me? Because I can't find it on my own, and I'm pretty smart. I'm really good at looking for data and unpacking data, and I can't find it. So what that says to me is that we're painting a story very similar to the story of gun violence. We talk about gun violence without talking about domestic violence, right? As if all gun violence is the same. All sex work is not the same. And so I am honored to be here. I am pleased that I'm now surrounded by elected leaders who are trying to be more thoughtful, more intentional about how we spend our limited dollars and stop believing the rhetoric around who keeps us safe and what safety looks like. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I would tell you who I was, but that sign told you.
Okay. Right. Dr. Angela Jones.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Angela Jones. I'm a professor of sociology and director of women, gender, and sexuality studies at the State University of New York. I study sexual commerce, emphasizing marginalized people's labor experiences. I'm the author of 9 books and have published findings from empirical studies in countless leading academic peer-reviewed journals, as well as in the mainstream press. My research has been cited in the New York Times, among other news outlets. I am one of the co-founders of Scientists for Sex Workers' Rights, and have worked on scientific memos and briefs for the New York Legislature decrim bill, and have other policy experience. And I'm just pleased to give the following opening statement to you all. Decades of research unequivocally show that criminalization makes sex workers less safe, contributing to violence, poor health outcomes, banking and housing discrimination, stigma, and driving exploitative third parties underground only makes catching them harder and more expensive. Further, criminalization has had the most adverse effects on the most marginal, those experiencing poverty, people of color, trans people, and people with disabilities. In contrast, decriminalizing sex work has many benefits to workers and public safety and health. Social scientists and researchers from sex worker advocacy groups show that decriminalization will decrease trafficking. In New Zealand, for example, under the Prostitution Reform Act, prostitution was decriminalized in 2003. And empirical studies show that among street-based sex workers, they reported a significant and positive change in their previously negative relationships with law enforcement and reported safer working conditions. Further, decriminalization improves health outcomes and safety, and most critically, earned workers rights and legal pathways to challenge parties that seek to coerce, control, and exploit them. Critically, the decriminalization of prostitution is supported by leading national and international organizations such as the American Civil Liberties Union, Amnesty International, Global Alliance Against Trafficking Women, Human Rights Watch, Lambda Legal, Open Society, UNAIDS, the World Health Organization, countless sex worker rights organizations, and an international community of scientists who conduct research on sex work. It is crucial to recognize that no public policy or law enforcement activity to date has eliminated the supply or demand for consensual sex for monetary exchange. Sex work remains one of the few options to make money for a large number of individuals. Research indicates that most laws criminalizing sex workers or their clients fail to address the structural conditions that most impact sex workers: economic disparities, xenophobia, racial and gender injustice, and poverty. Policymakers must find ways to make sex work safer, healthier, and transparent, just like legalized gaming and marijuana decriminalization. Thank you.
I'm Barb Brentz. I'm a professor in the sociology department at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. I've been studying the sex industry for the past 30 years. Most of my research has focused on the small rural brothel industry in legal brothel industry in Nevada. But I've also been active lately in working with the Nevada legislature to try to improve that system, and I hope someday we can decriminalize sex work entirely in the entire state. I've also studied sex industry consumer and clients, and was part of a large survey, probably the largest survey to date, of sex industry clients in the U.S. and also the U.K., and we have a book that just came out on that. I'm also involved in some research that's comparing legal systems, decriminalized systems in the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and in New Zealand, where it's currently decriminalized. And so I can't wait for that comparative research to come out. I'm one of a large and growing number of people who are doing research on the sex industry, evidence-based research, peer-reviewed research, and what struck me over the years is that there's a lot of impassioned people in this debate, but relatively rarely have we relied on evidence-based research for this. And so I'm just thrilled that Dr. Jones and I are here on this session today, and we helped start a campaign, Scientists for Sex Worker Rights, and we recently had 250 scholars who do research in this area sign on in support of decriminalizing sex work. So there's a lot of science behind what you're about to hear today. Overall, I will say what we know real quickly, in addition to what Dr. Jones had just said, is that there are a wide variety of individuals that do sex work, people from all social classes, races, genders, and experiences, all the way from the most marginalized to, there was one study of 7,000 college students that found 5% of them were involved in the sex industry. The research is pretty clear that the vast majority of people involved in the sex trade do so by choice or because they must earn a living. Force, coercion, trafficking happens, but it's relatively rare compared to the whole body of people who do work in the sex industry. The evidence is really clear, as you will hear today, that arresting sex workers or their clients does not help. In fact, it increases risk and may push sex workers by choice into trafficking situations. Kids selling sex on the streets tell researchers that it's not the pimps that worry them, it's getting food, housing, and shelter. That's what we need. The evidence is clear that where legislation has removed criminal penalties against sex work, that's the best way to fight HIV/AIDS. Yeah. The evidence is so clear, as we've said, that 250 of the most respected scientists in the U.S. and around the world recently called for federal and state legislators to decriminalize sex work as part of their efforts to reform the criminal justice system. So I implore you to listen to everyone today, scientists, as well as, and most importantly, individuals that are involved in the trade. Yeah.
That's me. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
So my name is Vanessa Worry, and for the past 12 years, I've served in several capacities as a case manager, as a community health educator, behavioral health specialist, and community-based researcher in communities that reflect the multiple identities that I hold: current and former foster youth, homeless young adults, transition-age young people, runaway LGBTQ teens, and communities of Black transgender women with an emphasis on Black transgender women with multiple involvements in carceral settings. The perspective that I gained from and the informal data that I gathered through my interactions with the community highlighted that individuals who exist at the intersections of Blackness, queerness, transness, and womanhood, just to name a few, are disproportionately likelier to experience racialized and gender-based discrimination and violence that takes the form of limited access to full societal participation, negative interactions with law enforcement, and lack of access to the resources that enable us to meet our most basic needs. When we're talking about criminalization of sex work, we are opening up the most marginalized members of our society to added and increased violence, and the decriminalization of sex work is what will keep us safe. So as you listen to everyone around here, know that communities have always existed as able of articulating their own needs and organizing themselves to meet those needs. And when we say that we want decriminalization, it is in fact to keep us safe. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Catherine Dyer. I am a Portland, Oregon sex worker. More specifically, I'm a dominatrix, and I absolutely love my job. I can't think of any other job that I would rather do. And when I retire, I plan on teaching other people to do exactly what I do because it makes a lot of people happy. In the leather community, we prioritize each other's physical and emotional health and safety, and we take pride in it. In Oregon, we have a rich culture of sex positivity, including our state standards on sex education, organizations like Sex Positive Portland, and community events like the Naked Bike Ride. As you listen to the testimonies tonight, I ask that you do so with these perspectives in mind, to think about the health and safety of our sex work community, and to consider sex to be an inherently positive, healthy, natural part of the human experience. I ask you to listen with an open mind, a humanizing heart, and in the spirit of, sorry, this is very emotional for me, and in the spirit of embracing diversity. The reason that I am here is because I have faith that you will. Thank you very much.
My name is Melissa Brudo. I'm a longtime activist and attorney for sex workers and survivors of human trafficking. I'm the legal director of a national organization called Decriminalize Sex Work, and the co-director of New York City-based Sharmus Outlaw Advocacy and Rights Institute. I have a joint JD and MPH Masters in Public Health from Georgetown Law and Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And I always knew I was going to be a lawyer, and I specifically went to law school to decriminalize prostitution. And I showed up in 2003 at Georgetown saying that to everybody. And they thought I was out of my mind, but here we are. And I also got my master's in public health because of the reasons that Dr. Jones and Dr. Brents and everyone else, the data is so overwhelming in support of full decrim. And I have spent most of my legal career, I've been a lawyer now 15 years, so I spent most of my legal career directly representing sex workers, but primarily survivors of human trafficking. And I filed in one, the first ever vacatur case in the country. New York was the first state in 2010 to have vacatur, or record relief, for survivors of human trafficking. And I filed in one, the first case. And I've since then have assisted other attorneys and policymakers around the country in writing their vacatur laws and also how to implement them as a lawyer, right? How to argue and win those cases. And so even though I went into this work firmly from a decrim perspective, a lot of my experience has been around anti-trafficking. I have somewhat of a panoramic view of the industry as an outsider, as an attorney, somebody that has represented and advocated for people in such a wide spectrum of the sex industry. And now, you know, I had this instinctive feeling, you know, 20 plus years ago as an undergrad, that we had to, you know, as a staunch feminist, we had to decriminalize prostitution. And it's so exciting to see us at the precipice of significant nationwide legal change, right? It's, of course, state by state, right? State laws regulate prostitution. In every single state, it's fully criminalized, except for in Nevada, where, right, rural counties, some rural counties can vote or choose to have brothels. But we otherwise, we live in a criminalized regime, right? And so, you know, I just want to very quickly, you know, without taking up too much more time, give a little bit of an overview of where we sit nationally on a policy level right now, because it has been incredibly significant in the last 2 to 3 years, the legislative change that we've seen across the country. And I really believe, and I'm a New Yorker, so it's certainly not like I can speak, you know, so much locally, but everything I know, you know, Oregon has always led the way. You know, I mean, we like to think that, you know, it's New York City or else, but like, you know, we have Albany and nothing moves. So we're not going to go first, that's for sure. Maybe last. So, you know, I just wanted to give a little bit of an overview of, you know, of what is happening in some other states to situate, you know, Oregon. And again, I really do think that Oregon and maybe some other states on the West Coast, and then some states in New England are really going to be the leaders here. And then maybe we can get to New York. But so in terms of New York, where, you know, where I live and I'm an attorney and I'm from, we did have some significant victories this past legislative session. We were able to finally repeal an extremely archaic loitering for the purpose of engaging in prostitution offense law. The Seattle City Council repealed that last year, if people recall. And we were finally able to do it in New York on a statewide level. We also were able to expand our vacatur law, or record relief for survivors of human trafficking, because we had fallen so behind in the last 10 years in New York that I believe that battle will be continuing for many, many, many years. In Rhode Island, just 2 weeks ago, we were able to get past a study commission. It doesn't, you know, it took years to, as Alex and I were talking the other night, to pass something that is simply a study commission, but it is exciting in the sense that, you know, it's a legislative body made up of key stakeholders around the state that will look at evidence and data, right, and make determinations and suggestions. There was also a full decrim bill that was introduced there as well as an immunity bill and an expansion of patients' bill of rights to include non-discrimination of people based on their profession. In New Hampshire, we were able to get past that non-discrimination bill for patients in healthcare settings, and an immunity bill passed as well, which allows people to come forward and report crimes that were committed against them. And if they disclose that they were engaging in prostitution, they will be immune from prosecution for that. And New York also has a pending immunity bill. Vermont had an immunity bill passed this legislative session as well. And just this week, the Burlington City Council in Vermont passed a resolution supporting full decrim. Come on, Oregon. So there's a lot happening in a lot of states. So I just wanted to situate it, you know, what, in a national perspective, that things are moving along. So thank you.
My name is Amy Marie Merrill. I'm the executive director of the Cupcake Girls. We provide confidential support to adult entertainers as well as sex trafficking survivors. I I'm pretty nervous to public speak. This is my first time not speaking to a Zoom screen in a year and a half, and I've never been nervous to public speak before. I don't know what's going on.
Just look at us in little boxes.
Yeah. I've worked in, my history and perspective comes from being a service worker, working with sex trafficking survivors, domestic violence survivors, as well as people in the adult entertainment industry now for the last 16 years. And the reason that I started this work was because of my first friend. I was homeschooled in Eugene, Oregon, and my first friend was a sex worker. And she let me know, trigger warning, rape and assault. She let me know that she was being abused by two police officers in Eugene, Oregon. And I was a really young teen, and she was my first friend. And I wasn't sure what to do with this information, and so I said, okay, let's go to the police department. And so we went to the police department, and we filed a complaint, and nothing happened. And then we went back, and we filed another complaint the next time that something happened, and nothing happened. And slowly but surely, she, I don't even know how, got so much courage and empowerment inside of herself and started reaching out into the community and found 40 other women that were being assaulted by these two police officers.
Wow.
So Roger Majana and Juan Francisco Lara were prosecuted, which was a win, I guess. I have a lot of complex thoughts about the prison industrial complex myself. And if that was even okay, yeah. If it was enough. This specific situation opened my eyes to the hundreds of stories that were so similar to my friends, and opened my eyes to a community that I knew absolutely nothing about, and I haven't been able to stop looking at this community with honor to be able to share the same world that they do. The tenacity and courage that comes out of this community is so phenomenal. After this situation, I moved to Portland, Oregon in 2009 to take a job at Wieden & Kennedy, where I worked for 9 years. And I was on a run with my dog by the Portland Art Museum on 11th and Jefferson and saw another woman being assaulted. And I ran backwards to Safeway because I didn't have cell phones. 2009, you didn't really carry those all the time yet, which is so wild. But a security guard at Safeway, he laughed at me when I said that she needed help. And he said, she's a prostitute. They're just going to arrest her anyway. And so I waited for the police department to get there. When they did arrive, I asked them, is this true? And I didn't know anything about the police department at that time. And they said, this is true. And I said, well, I want to talk to your manager. And so I ended up talking to many, many managers until I was sitting across the way from Chief Rosie at the time, who told me that if I wanted to make any sort of change, that I needed to partner with grassroots nonprofits, change legislation. And so I said some expletives, left, and then I decided to dedicate my life to doing both. In my work, I've spent a lot of time reuniting parents with their children because their job is deemed unsafe. And then their children are placed into foster care, even though it's been proven for decades now that children are far better off to stay with their parents over foster care, except for extreme circumstances. Yep. My money is spent expunging records so that our clients are able to stay out of and away from the prison industrial complex and get jobs and housing after arrests. I'm ashamed that my tax money has gone to criminalization, and I'm frustrated that I'm also paying to undo the harm that our government is doing to these tenacious, courageous people. So I'm here to ask us all to really listen and lean in and hear these people. They are so courageous for being here, and I just want to honor all the sex workers tonight. They're in this room. All the things that you might hear that might be hard to hear. Cupcake Girls make themselves available, and we have a counselor standing by if anybody needs to debrief after tonight.
Hi, I am the Reverend Carlin Richter. I am an Episcopal priest here in Portland, and I am honored and humbled to be invited to be sitting here tonight. Christianity has a really rough history of being part of the problem of shame, sex negativity, and on behalf of the church, I would like to apologize.
Whoa.
I want to work towards healing and liberation, which is what I believe Jesus came here to do. I believe in a God who showed up in a human body and never once shied away from touch, women, or sex workers.
That's true.
The criminalization of sex work is much more about power, control, and shame than any Christian value of love, justice, or mercy. Jesus, whose own encounter with law enforcement didn't end so well, hung out all the time with sex workers. And a friend of mine, who is a sex worker, said, "I think the real reason that Jesus hung out with prostitutes is because we are so nice to people." No one is made safer by living under the threat of arrest or harassment. And if we genuinely want to care for our communities, it seems easy and obvious to begin by listening to the voices of the people who are impacted by our policies, and not just listen, but respect them, believe them, and love them. And I think that is what we are here to do tonight.
Thank you all for coming tonight. We have gathered statements and witnesses from across the country for tonight. They're across the world. Their stories are complicated. Their feelings are complicated. We have a great deal of empathy for them. These stories are hard to hear sometimes. They're hard to accept. They're hard to understand. And what I'm asking tonight, and what is the final statement on this, is that you listen with compassion, with empathy, and to treat our witnesses with dignity and respect, just the same as you would expect to receive in return. Decriminalization is a wonderful thing, and we're going to tell you all about it tonight.
The decriminalization of sex work is the removal of civil and criminal penalties for trading sex for money between one buyer and one seller. Human Rights Watch supports the full decriminalization of consensual adult sex work. Decriminalizing sex work maximizes sex workers' legal protection and their ability to get justice and health care. Legal recognition of sex workers and their occupation maximizes their protection, dignity, and equality. Criminalization exposes sex workers to abuse and exploitation by law enforcement officials, such as police officers. Criminalization consistently undermines sex workers' ability to seek justice for crimes against them. Criminalization of sex work also has a negative effect on sex workers' rights to health and access to care. Criminalization exposes sex workers to abuse and exploitation by law enforcement officials. We went over that, but it's worth saying twice. Criminalization consistently undermines, look at that, we did them twice. In June 2003, New Zealand became the first country to decriminalize sex work with the passage of the Prostitution Reform Act. Dame Catherine Healy, who may be with us later tonight, of the New Zealand Prostitutes Collective, says it is not against the law to work as a sex worker or to operate a brothel in New Zealand, nor is it against the law to pay for sexual services. However, it is against the law for any third party to facilitate anyone under the age of 18 into sex work. It is also illegal to do sex work if you are visiting New Zealand on a temporary visa. These issues are discussed below. So New Zealand is the only country in the world with a law which aims to uphold the human rights of sex workers and to decriminalize prostitution. The role of the police in New Zealand is to work with the community to make it safe. And sex workers are part of the community. In other words, under the New Zealand model, sex workers have the same recourse to justice as anyone else.
My name is Corinne Hawk. I just want to start by saying thank you to the committee testimony. I'm a 28-year-old queer writer, mental health counselor, disabled activist, and former sex worker. I live in Asheville, North Carolina. My formative years were spent living in Las Vegas, Nevada, where friends' mothers were strippers, escorts, cam girls. Several of my classmates from high school and college each entered the trade. My time in the industry, just like theirs, enabled me to further my education, take care of my family, my medical needs, and my community. I am someone who left the industry with every intention of returning. My time as a sex worker was empowering, healing, and it's work that I deeply enjoy. People such as myself, who live with a disability, experience job discrimination, poverty, and a lack of access to healthcare at uniquely high rates. We can be paid less due to labor laws that permit companies to pay disabled employees below the minimum wage. due to disability laws that require individuals who do not have more than $2,000 in assets, no more than $795 in monthly income, and restriction on disabled people's ability to marry or live with partners or family without losing life-saving medical care, many of us turn to sex work to survive. It is difficult to find work that does not compromise our health. Many of us can't work long hours without being in pain, and the high wages and flexible hours of sex work give people with disabilities the capability to care for ourselves, our families, and our community without compromising our health. 90% of disabled people will experience or have experienced some form of sexual assault, rape, or abuse. We are a conveniently vulnerable population. When a disabled sex worker is assaulted or raped, they can't go to the authorities. We can't call the police. If a disabled individual is convicted of solicitation, prostitution, or trafficking, they can and will lose their assistance. When disabled sex workers are tried and convicted in our penal systems, they are subjected to the barbaric conditions of our prisons, denied our basic right to proper health care. We are funneled into the largest human trafficking ring in the US, the for-profit prison system. Progress in our society is long overdue. The time is now to abolish the laws and institutions that deny our human rights. It is time to fully decriminalize sex work.
Hi, my name is Nicole Gill, and I'm a former sex worker and Oregon resident. I retired from the adult film industry at the age of 20 and all other forms of sex work shortly afterwards to pursue my passion for helping others in ways where I wouldn't be stigmatized. I went to school and became an EMT, and eventually a paramedic. During those years, I hid my past, a great personal expense, the expense of fear and shame. I helped save many lives and put my own life in extreme danger to assist others both on and off the clock. It was not until I was in nursing school at Southwestern Oregon Community College that my past caught up with me. I was exceeding and even had made the dean's list until my teacher, advisor, and mentor was made aware of my secret and felt that justified her in destroying my academic career and future in medicine. I was subjected to bullying, harassment, and ostracized from my classmates. As this teacher changed grades, tried to have me expelled, and did everything she could to hurt me, all with a proud smile on her face. The worst part is that nobody stopped her. The nursing program director actively joined her crusade, and the college ultimately supported and allowed them to succeed in their goal. When it became clear to me that nobody was going to help me and that everything was suddenly gone, I broke. It was now clear to me that no matter how many years had passed or how many lives I had saved, that I would always be marked by a scarlet letter and never be able to give my children a good life. I made the decision to commit suicide. I was unconscious for close to 13 hours, and what I experienced in the backseat of my car on that remote abandoned property changed me as a person. I've only shared the details of my near-death experience with a few individuals, but to summarize, I was sent back for a reason and with a purpose. The ultimate reason is that my beautiful daughters need me, and they need me to create a better world for them. They need me to rip that scarlet letter off of my chest and throw it in the faces of those who insisted I wear it at all. Allowing myself to become so broken by hatred and bigotry to the point that I thought my daughters were better off without me is the only thing that I have to apologize for, and that apology goes to them alone. However, if I thought things were bad before my suicide attempt, they were so much worse after. The college refused attempts at peaceful, quiet, and even free resolutions, and I had no choice but to pursue legal action. And just as the school had circled the wagons around their nursing program, the town of Coos Bay circled the wagons around their college, and eventually the state of Oregon itself circled the wagons around their town. The intense acts against my family and efforts to gaslight me, discredit me, and silence me away from my lawsuit were things of nightmares. My children and I will bear the scars of those traumas for the rest of our lives. But Oregon's issues with cronies and politics and rampant corruption are conversations for another time, because I'm not here to discuss who hurt us. I'm here to discuss who helped us. It was sex workers that helped me get the media attention to the case and started a GoFundMe that allowed us to escape Coos County and Oregon altogether. It was sex workers that provided the internet so I could resume college online while we were living in a homeless shelter. Sex workers are a big reason I just graduated summa cum laude and as a national honor student with my bachelor's degree in political science It was sex workers that wrote me outstanding letters of recommendation for law school. And thanks to them, I just recently accepted just one of the nearly full scholarship offers I received to attend law school next month. It was sex workers that had more integrity, courage, and grace in their pinky fingers than anyone else in this equation had in their entire bodies. So today I say to sex workers from the bottom of my heart, thank you. I pledge to you my voice, my future legal career, and the life that you helped us rebuild. Together, we can eliminate the shadows of stigma we've been forced to hide in, shadows filled with ignorance, misinformation, hypocrisy, and double standards. Together, we can bring education, just basic humanity, back into conversations about sex work and why decriminalization is not just the best path forward, but the only path forward. Thank you.
Romance is out of fashion.